You're probably all familiar with the term substitutes. Growing up in school, I remember having substitute teachers. You'd come in, especially I remember in second grade because my second grade teacher didn't care for me too well. So when I came in on occasion and found a substitute teacher, I was excited. We've got a different teacher for the day. But substitute teachers are teachers who come in for a day or two. They fill in for a teacher. According to the dictionary, a substitute is a person or thing acting or serving in the place of another. So in the case of a substitute teacher coming in and just serving in the place of the teacher for a day or two. There are other substitutes. When we think about this particular word, substitute, for sugar, substitutes is sweet and low, stevia. Now, there's multiple kinds of substitutes for sugar. May even see honey substituted for sugar. But in both of these cases, both of these examples, substitute is not something that's done secretly to make you think that it's something else. If you're putting the little pink packet in, you know that it's not white sugar. Or if you're using honey, you realize I'm not trying to trick myself thinking this is sugar. It is a substitute. It's just something that you're replacing for. You don't see in a package made with real sugar, but they've used honey instead. If it's substituted with honey, it will state that. You don't have a substitute teacher come in, and as a student, you don't sit there and go, well, is this really my teacher? She just looks different today. No, you know it's a substitute. It's nothing that's hidden. So substitutes are communicated. Substitutes are something that's revealed. But you know it's in place of something else for a period of time. Sometimes things are not revealed. When I was young, and many of you have probably heard the phrase, phony as a $2 bill. Then they came out with a $2 bill. I have a couple of them at home. And before that, if you said, here, I'll give you a $2 bill, people wouldn't accept it. Even when they came out with $2 bills, there were businesses, I remember going in, and they said, that's not real. They hadn't seen them yet, didn't realize that there were $2 bills, and businesses said, nope, won't accept it. That's not real. They don't make $2 bills. But they did. And again, you wouldn't say, well, that's a counterfeit. Before they were real, it was counterfeit. But once they came out, most people would not, since it's not continued in production, most people would not think, well, it's a $2 bill. Is that real or is it not real? I have a $1 million bill. I don't even know if they produce a $1 million bill. This one looks very authentic. You look at the front of it, and it says $1 million. Has numbers, has everything just like you'd find on regular money. But on the back of it, there's something different. It says $1 million, United States of America, In God We Trust. But in fine print, it says, and I have to use a magnifying glass. I almost have to use a microscope. Magnifying glass to read this, but it says, the $1 million question. Will you go to heaven when you die? And it's all about going to heaven. So they handed out these. I can't remember where I got it. And I thought, well, that's pretty phony. Actually, both sides. Pretty phony in the information that's given. But it was interesting. I thought, I'm going to hang on to that. And as you can see, it's pretty stiff still. Keep it in a drawer at home. But it is phony. It is a substitute. But it's beyond that. It is counterfeit. It is something that's not real. Now, you couldn't pass that off as real money. Again, I don't think they make $1 million bills. But it is something that is counterfeit. Many years ago, we took a trip to Cancun, Mexico. We were at an all-inclusive resort. If those of you have been to all-inclusive resorts, it's nice because you can go to any restaurant that they have on the property and eat. So there were different restaurants to choose from. And one night we decided to go to the finer restaurant. You had to make reservations ahead of time because a lot of people want to eat there. But I was surprised to find that in this all-inclusive restaurant, they had filet mignon. And I thought, well, yeah, if I'm going to be in a restaurant and I can eat anything I want, I'm going to get the filet. So we eat our salads, and then they bring out the filet mignon. It looked kind of odd at first, and as I cut into it, I realized that they had taken skirt steak, something much different than filet mignon, and rolled it into a circle to look like filet mignon. And they called it filet mignon. Well, that's wrong. It's not filet mignon. I love food, and that doesn't pass as filet mignon, especially you cut into it and it kind of shreds off into chunks and is not that nice filet that we are typically used to seeing. Now, in this case, it wasn't a substitute. They didn't say, we're substituting this for a filet. They just brought it out, called it a filet mignon as a counterfeit. They tried to save money to deceive the customer, to make you think, well, I'm getting a filet at this all-inclusive. According to a dictionary, the word counterfeit is something that is made in the exact imitation of something valuable or important, with the intent to deceive or defraud. A counterfeit is something that has the intention of deceiving, defrauding someone. And most of the time when we think of counterfeit, we think of money because it's defrauding somebody of actual value. But they tried to pass off this particular skirt steak for filet mignon, and that is something that you can't really do without people noticing that. Let's look at a biblical example. Let's go to Exodus chapter 34. Exodus chapter 34 and verse 12. Exodus 34 and verse 12. Take heed to yourselves, lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land where you are going, and lest it be a snare in your midst. But you shall destroy their altars, break down the sacred pillars, cut down their wooden images, for you shall worship no other god. For the Lord, whose name is jealous, is a jealous God. Verse 15, lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land. He said, don't get in and make covenants with them. And they play the harlot with their gods and make sacrifices to their gods. And one of them invites you to eat of his sacrifice. And you take of his daughters for your sons, and his daughters play the harlot with the gods, and make your sons play the harlot with their gods. You shall make no molded gods for yourselves. God was clear not to replace him as God, not to even have an image of God to worship. What do we see that Israel had done? Let's go back to Exodus chapter 32. Exodus 32 and verse 1. It says, now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, they gathered together to Aaron and said to him, come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man whom has brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what's become of him. We don't know where Moses is, and we need a God, something that they could look at. Now, they didn't say, make us a substitute for God. They said, make us gods. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says, they wished for some visible material object as the symbol of divine presence. They wanted something that they could look at and say, this is God, which would go before them in the pillar as the pillar of fire had done. So Aaron said to them, break off the golden earrings which are in your ears, the ears of your wives and your sons and daughters, and bring them to me. So all the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hands, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool, and he made a molded calf. Notice what Aaron tells them. Then he said, this is your God. He didn't say, until Moses comes back, this is going to be our God for now. He said, no, this is your God, O Israel. And not only this is your God, this is your new God. He said, this is the God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. He said, this calf not only is a symbol, but it is God. It's the God who delivered you. It was a counterfeit. And because of their nature, they believed that it was their God. Even to the point of saying that this is the God who delivered us. It brought us out of the land of Egypt. Sadly, the world has believed in counterfeit gods since the beginning. So when at verse 5, so when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. It wasn't just to be a symbol. They began to worship. He built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, tomorrow is a feast to the Lord, a feast to the calf. Then they arose on the next day. They offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink, and they rose up to play. And the Lord said to Moses, go, get down, for your people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. He said, he doesn't say my people at that point. He said, go down, talk to your people that you brought out. Verse 8, they have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. And they have made themselves a molded calf, and they have worshipped it and sacrificed to it. And he said, and they said, this is your God, O Israel, that brought you up out of the land of Egypt. The Lord said to Moses, I have seen this people, and indeed it is a stiff-necked people. But you know, brethren, that stiff neck has continued through millennia, and it has gotten worse. Israel has gone full bore into adultery and false god worship, and yet many of them don't even know it. They think they are serving and worshiping the true God. Let me add what Moses said to Aaron after he saw what had happened, after he came down, destroyed the tablets. Exodus 32 and verse 21. Moses said to Aaron, what did this people do to you? How did they change your mind that you have brought up this great sin upon them? So Aaron said, do not let the anger of my Lord become hot. He said, you know the people, almost like, well, it wasn't me, it was them. You know the people, you know what they're like, that they are set on evil. For they said to me, make us gods that shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. And I said to them, whoever has any gold, let them break it off. So they gave it to me. I cast it into the fire, and this calf came out. Not only did he try to say, well, no, it's these people, you know how they are. But he says, I just threw the gold in, and almost like a calf walked out. A golden calf came out. International Standard Version said, out came this calf. Just like it kind of popped out or walked out. And when we look at that, we can think, well, that's not a very good story if you're going to try to pass something off as being believable. Can't pull that off on us. It's very clear what was taking place. Kind of like trying to pass off a skirt steak as a filet mignon. It's one of those things, no, it's very obvious. This is not what you say it is. But it was a counterfeit. Let's go a little bit further in history. Let's look at Daniel chapter 3. Daniel chapter 3 and verse 8. Daniel chapter 3. Beginning in verse 8. Therefore at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. And they spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, the flute, the harp, the lyre, and the psaltery, and the symphony, with all kinds of music, shall fall down and worship the golden image. He said, you've made this command that everyone has to worship this false god. The image was to be like him, but it was to be worshipped. It was a counterfeit god. He said they are to worship this as a god. But not to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They knew it was meaningless. And they even said, we don't even have to think about it. We are not going to serve this pagan god or this false image of a god. Verse 11, whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And that then there are certain Jews whom you have set before the affairs of the providence of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you as a symbol of himself. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up. Let's go to verse 26. Daniel 3 and verse 26. Then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace, and he spoke. This is after they'd been thrown in. And he spoke to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the furnace. He said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here. He realized this isn't just an image of a god. This isn't just something that man has created. He realized there is a power there that he didn't understand. But he said, servants of the Most High God, the most powerful God, because he protected you even in a fiery furnace. He recognized that their God was not an image. God the Father nor Jesus Christ can ever be replaced by something physical, something created by man. And man has tried that going back for thousands and thousands of years. So they cannot be replaced by an image. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the midst of the fire, and the satraps, administrators, governors, and the king's counselors gathered together, and they saw these men on whose bodies the fire had no power. They realized this isn't just trickery, this isn't just a false god, this is a god that has the power to protect them from being burnt. The hair of their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected, and not even having the smell of fire on them. Nebuchadnezzar spoke and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him, and they have frustrated the king's word and yielded their bodies, that they should not serve or worship any god except their own God. So we see two examples. We see the children of Israel who kept going back to pagan gods, accepting the gods around them in the nations that were close. And we see an example here of individuals who said, there was nothing that can replace God. We will not serve or worship any god except their own God. But again, through time, Israel has forgotten that. Mankind as a whole has been serving pagan gods for millennia, for thousands of years. The pagan festivals, each in their seasons, are kept by most of the world today and are a worship of pagan gods. I'm going to go back to the beginning, Genesis chapter 10. Genesis chapter 10. And have given here from time to time in years past sermons on Christmas, sermons on pagan holidays, sermons on pagan festivals and their origins. And I wanted to approach this from a little bit different way today. Genesis chapter 10 and verse 8 says, Cush begot Nimrod, and he became a mighty one on the earth. It's the New King James Version. He became a mighty one. So we can see Nimrod was born, and we can think, well, mighty one, he was big, he was strong. We think of him as being this dynamic individual. The words mighty one from Strong's Exhaustive Concordance means powerful, valiant, or a champion. He stood out as a fighter, as a political figure, as somebody who's valiant and having power. Verse 9, he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore, it is said, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. Now, we can read that and think, well, okay, so he's a great hunter. I grew up hunting. My brother is much more a hunter than I am. And he's a great, as I could say, well, he's a mighty hunter. Here it's saying, mighty hunter before the Lord. And we can think, well, this is saying that even God thought he was a mighty hunter. The words before the Lord are important. From Strong's exhaustive concordance again, the word here used is P-A-N-I-Y-M. It's pronounced panim. It means against, angered with, or battling against. So he was a mighty hunter battling against the Lord. He was a mighty hunter who was angered with the Lord. So it's not saying that God looked at him as a mighty hunter. It's saying that he looked at him as somebody who was against him, battling against him. Even the name Nimrod, according to Barnes' notes, means strong or a rebel. He rebelled against God. In Genesis 13, verse 13, in the King James Version, it says, "But the men of Sodom were wicked, and they were sinners before the Lord, exceedingly." They were sinners against the Lord. They stood in rebellion against God. And again, we wouldn't say, well, they're sinners before the Lord that God knew or that was open. Just they were sinners against the Lord. International Standard Version says they were sinners in their defiance of the Lord. New King James Version says exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. So Nimrod was worshipped. He was worshipped as being mighty. He was and became a counterfeit God even after his death. Jameson Fawcett Brown says of Nimrod, mentioned as eclipsing all of his family in renown, he early distinguished himself by his daring and successful prowess in hunting wild beasts. By those useful services, he earned a title to public gratitude, and having established a permanent ascendancy over the people, he grew as a leader. He founded the first kingdom in the world. And again, that's by Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown talking about Genesis 10 and verse 10. Genesis 10:10 in the New King James says, "And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech, Akkad, Calneh, in the land of Shinar." Says the beginning of his kingdom. We heard about governments, kingdoms, ways of running governments. This was a human government, and it was headed by this individual, Nimrod. But he established what would become known later as Babylon, Mystery Babylon the Great. Let's go to Revelation chapter 17. Revelation chapter 17 and verse 3. Revelation 17, verse 3. So it says, "So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy. Having set 7 heads, 10 horns, the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of the abominations and the filthiness of her fornication. And on her forehead a name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth." This goes back to the first human kingdom established on the earth. This government that Nimrod established as Babel, in which we later see Babylon. But it was established by a powerful leader who was in rebellion against God and was in defiance of God. Let's go to Genesis chapter 11. We're going to read a little bit about Nimrod and what he did. Genesis chapter 11 and in verse 5. It says, "But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, Indeed, the people are one, and they have one language, and this is what they begin to do. Now nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them." They're excelling. They're building up fast, and they are perverse. He says, "Come, let us go down and confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech." So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of the earth, and they seized the building of that city. This is where mankind was scattered, and those language barriers were established as well. Therefore, its name is called Babel, because the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth. Man today is still scattered, separated by language barriers. But the language barriers are starting to come down again. And God warned in the end time that knowledge would increase. And now technology is doing some amazing things that even with the cell phones that most people carry today, if you're in a foreign country, and it doesn't matter what foreign country, they have programs that you just say what you want to convey, and it says it and translates it into that language. So if you're on the street, you can, you know, how do I get to such and such in Paris or France? How do I get to this certain place in Tokyo? And it will translate it into whatever language of the country you're in. So there's changes taking place, and we see man is learning to work around these things, but we see knowledge increasing as well. Mankind has not stopped being one in their beliefs. They have continued to serve false gods and pagan gods. And multiple nations even serve sometimes the same counterfeit gods. I want to look at the history of Christmas. Many of the customs man has today, whether it be Christmas, Easter, Valentine's Day, Halloween, all seem to trace their roots back to Saturnalia, Lupercalia, and Baal worship. Saturnalia was the parallel to the Carthaginian Baal. So you have Saturnalia and Baal were the same. Now, we know people have continued to turn back to Baal worship. We see that in the past, but it was also depending on what part of the world they lived in. Lupercus was none other than Pan, or the Arcadian god of light. He was equivalent to the Phoenician sun god, Baal. So Saturnalia was Baal. Lupercus was the sun god, Baal. The title Lupercus, or wolf hunter, was given to Nimrod. Many customs can be traced back to Nimrod himself, the builder of the Tower of Babel, in which we got the Babylonian religion, and it began to grow. I want to read from The Plain Truth About Christmas. This is from Worldwide Church of God, 1974, on page 7 of The Plain Truth About Christmas. The real origin of Christmas. If we got Christmas from the Roman Catholics, and they got it from paganism, where did the pagans get it? Where, when, and what is the real origin? It is a chief custom of the corrupt system denounced all through the Bible, prophecies, and teachings under the name Babylon. It all started and originated with the original Babylon of ancient Nimrod. Yes, it stems from roots whose beginnings was shortly this side of the flood. Nimrod, under various names, has continued to be worshipped. And we can say, well, what if I'm not worshipping Nimrod? I just worship Jesus Christ, but I keep that same festival. Well, even all the things that comprise those festivals, and here looking at Christmas, even the Christmas tree. Is the Christmas tree from Nimrod and Babylon? Or was that something that was later added? Because there are things as time went along that were added to. But it's interesting, a lot of those things that were added to or changed or modified, they also came from pagan customs. The encyclopedia states concerning the Christmas tree, the Germans had transformed this pagan symbol of fertility into a Christian symbol of rebirth. So they transform a Christmas tree that had been used as a symbol of fertility and said now it's a Christian symbol of rebirth. And again, today most people don't say, I've got a tree of rebirth in my living room. We're going to decorate the tree of rebirth. No, they call it a Christmas tree and they don't give much thought to what it is. Besides the idea that the sun would come back out and things would grow again, is there more to the rebirth? I want to read from the Hebraic Heritage News Group the story of Nimrod as it relates to Christmas and Easter. It says, Nimrod, the grandson of Noah, became the first king, known as Sargon the First. He built Babylon and Nineveh, and being warlike, he wore a type of helmet with a horn on the front, a trait inherited by the Druid Vikings of the Celts, descendants of the Assyrian line. Nimrod means tyrant. He led the Sumerians of Babylon to pay tribute to the skies, the sun, moon, stars, and planets, with the sacrifice of their children. The Tower of Babel was built for this purpose and echoes other cultures such as the Aztecs, Mayans, and Incas. Since the head of this government was such an idolatrous tyrant, Shem, Nimrod's uncle, it says, killed him, and Nimrod's mother, also known as his wife, Semiramis, consoled the people by making them believe that the child she carried was Nimrod reincarnated. Now, this is not the Christmas story that most people hear of, but this is where it originated. And named him Duzu, D-U-Z-U, or in other languages, Tammuz, T-A-M-M-U-Z. Now, I plan to speak about Tammuz not too long from here in the future, but it says Babylonian for the two, or Babylonian for the sun who rises. So Dazu or Tammuz was Babylonian for the sun who rises, one who is reborn, one who comes back up. This Dazu went into the groves of forest and placed a gift on a tree to honor Nimrod each year at the winter solstice. Now, it's interesting watching a program this week. Somebody had posted it on Facebook, but it was an interview, and they were interviewing a popular TV host who was doing this interview, and this woman was telling him basically all of this stuff, where it, all the pagan cultures, where it came from, and he said, that doesn't matter. You're going to deprive your children of keeping Christmas. And she went on, well, here's where it came from. Here's what they did for Christmas. This is what it means. And he goes, so you would deprive your children of Christmas. And he just kept going, like, how could you not keep Christmas? It was interesting, but she had her facts down, and she was dead on in what was taking place. So we see this particular description of what the origin of Christmas is. It goes on, it said, it has been said that Dazu was the offspring of Nimrod, who mated with his mother. Nimrod became known as Baal, meaning Lord. Baal became Lord. He became a false god, meaning Lord, and was worshipped by the Babylonians as the sun in the sky, and thus the origin of going to heaven at death. That they looked up to the sky and they thought, well, this is where the gods are, this is where we go. Trees and branches became symbols of Nimrod. Symbols, you know, they portrayed something. It's not saying that they were that, but they became symbols of him, represented him. It says, because Nimrod was cut down by Shem, the tree stump became a place of honoring him. Thus, the Hebrew scriptures speak of the pagans going into the groves, bringing a branch to the nose, that one that comes up fairly tall, that they could bring into a home, and going into the forest, cutting down a tree and decorating it and propping it up so that it would not totter or move back and forth. The winter solstice was a time when the sun was thought to be reborn, and so December 25th was celebrated as Baal's or Nimrod's birthday. This goes back long before Christ came on the scene. Now, most people even still say, well, yeah, I know it came from these pagan festivals, but now it's different. How easy it has been to ensnare billions to be a part of it. When the pagan customs and the pagan holidays that are kept today, they still carry on so many ways of these pagan festivals that began with Nimrod. Still, after all that, surely God doesn't hold it against us if we keep them. If we We say, well, we're doing it for a different reason. Surely he'll look at it as we did it to honor him. Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy 8 and verse 19. Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 19. And it shall be, if you do not at all forget the Lord your God, and walk after other gods, and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day, you shall surely perish. Now he made it very clear, you don't walk after other gods. You don't walk after other gods and say, well, I'm doing this to serve you. You don't build a golden calf and say, well, we're doing this to serve what we picture as God. He says, I testify to you this day, you shall surely perish. You live that way of life, you put other gods before him, you're going to die. I want to look at one more counterfeit that takes us away, or takes most people today, billions, away from the true God. Look at just one part of Christmas, and for most people, this is what they think about as Christmas. Christmas wouldn't be the same without Santa Claus or old Saint Nick. And we're talking about counterfeits. Have you ever thought of Santa being a counterfeit Christ? Now, we know it's a pagan festival, and now they've come up with a symbol. But have we ever looked at some of the things that are portrayed by Santa Claus or old Saint Nick? I want to ask some questions. How does Santa fit into Christmas? How does Santa fit into the birth of Christ? Most people will say, well, it's just how we do it today. Surely Santa Claus isn't such a terrible lie to tell our children. It's interesting hearing stories of sometimes the things that take place, and especially with our children when they go into public schools. I was talking to a school teacher recently, and she said in her class it came up, and there was a small girl who raised her hand and started talking about Santa Claus wasn't real, Christmas was pagan, these things that we keep, God tells us not to. And she said some of the class was mortified, others are going, what do you mean Santa's not real? But she was going on, and this was second grade class, so this little second grade girl was going on and on about how Santa's not real. And that is destructive to some kids. Oh, what do you mean Santa's not real? My parents tell me, and my parents aren't going to lie to me, Santa's real. Santa brings us these things. The encyclopedia says, in Germany, Santa Claus was known as Saint Nicholas and was accompanied by Black Peter, who was an elf that punished disobedient children. Now, today, you don't see Black Peter riding in a sleigh with Santa Claus. Different things were removed. Different things are that people might find offensive. You don't want to offend people. You want to draw people in. You want to get them on your page. So things have changed. He was also known as Sinterklaas. In 1823... it was portrayed as the modern-day Santa after a poem by Clement Clark Moore, A Visit from Old St. Nicholas, flying from rooftop to rooftop with reindeer pulled by a sleigh, going down the chimney and leaving gifts. Not a lot needs to be said of how that does not fit into the birth of Christ. It does not fit into what they claim to be worshiping. It doesn't need to fit because it's a counterfeit. It's a veil. It's something, here, don't look at what the Bible says, but here, accept tradition. Accept what we now worship like. And it is simply tradition. I want to look at a little deeper description of this counterfeit. And I say counterfeit because as we look at some of these things, it's going to be pretty clear when you think about what Santa is portraying. CollinsDictionary.com says Santa Claus, or Santa, is an imaginary old man with long white beard and a red coat. Traditionally, young children in many countries are told that he brings Christmas presents. Folklore tells us that a fat, white-bearded, jolly old man in a red suit who lives at the North Pole, makes toys for children, and distributes the gifts at Christmas time. So I want to look at this character of Santa. It is an impersonator who is a counterfeit. He is there to draw the attention away from. He's there to be accepted as real. And there are adults who even still from their childhood believe that he's real. But he is an impersonator. Santa Claus today doesn't have a beginning. We don't see where, oh, Santa Claus began at this certain time, or this was a man who then gained this power to be able to fly through the sky, to cover every home in one night. So it doesn't have a beginning, doesn't seem to age every year. And since I was a child, you still have the same image of Santa Claus. Not that being that giant overweight guy, never has heart problems, never has any health issues. He's always there and always makes it for Christmas. But he just keeps on living. So he is white-haired. He's aged. He comes from the North Pole. He creates things using elves and supernatural creatures. Now, if you look at the building of all these toys, where do these toys come from? Oh, he has elves that help him and supernatural creatures. He wears the red robe. He rides through the air and now pulled by sleigh and reindeer. And he comes bringing gifts or rewards. Think about who this is really describing when we think of this harmless Santa Claus. Seeing these things all around us and for the last few weeks, we can realize, yes, it is describing something. I thought after Christmas all the music would go away, but had to go to the store this week and it's still there. Still waiting for that end of the music, end of the Christmas sounds, the Christmas shoppers. But it goes on. I want to read from DutchNews.nl. 10 things you need to know to celebrate Sinterklaas. The story of how St. Nicholas comes at night to deliver presents is based on his generosity to 3 prostitutes who were tossed sacks of gold for a dowry through a window under cover of night. Of course, he immediately became patron saint to prostitutes as well. At some point, every Dutch child comes face to face with Sinterklaas, that he meets and sees every single child, whether it be at their school, hockey club, or even a home visit. Yes, there are lots of specialist agencies around who will supply you with a scent or piet, or even a video message from the great man. So the thought is that he sees everything and he knows everything that's going on. Sinterklaas carries with him Het Groot Boek, a big book with the name of every man, woman, and child, in which it tells him whether they are deserving of a present or not. A giant book that has every name in it and describes whether you've been good or bad, whether you are sinful or not. So who is he like? Who has he replaced in the eyes of billions around the world? Revelation 20. Revelation chapter 20 and in verse 12. He says, I saw the dead, small and great, standing before the Lord, and the books were opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the book. So here we have the books, and he's judging out of a giant book. And from the beginning of Sinterklaas, or St. Nicholas, he carried with him this giant book of the name of every individual. Job talks about in Job 37, verse 22, in talking about God, he comes from the north as golden splendor. an individual that comes from the north and has a giant book with all names in it. I want to show you a few slides as we look forward to some further descriptions. As we get these pulled up, I thought it was interesting, and I thought about just referring to these and telling you could go look at them. You're not going to be able to see these on the webcast, but I want to bring up some photos and descriptions, and you can look these up if you look up at these descriptions as I go through. Easy things to look up and be able to see. But in slide number one, we're reading the lyrics to Santa Claus is Coming to Town. He's making a list and he's checking it twice. He's going to find out who's naughty or nice. He knows who's done wrong and knows who hasn't. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. It says, so be good, for goodness sake. Sees you when you're sleeping, when you're awake, and knows if you're good or bad. Wow. This individual from the north, this big, jolly, old guy with a beard, is watching us at all times. He knows what goes on. Next slide. This was when I was at Louisville, Kentucky this week. I went for a walk down the street, and I happened to see this billboard. As you get ready to go onto the interstate, it says, Santa sees you, so drive sober. Doesn't say God sees you and he knows what you're doing, so drive sober. No, Santa sees you. Santa knows everything that's going on. Santa sees you, so drive sober. Next slide. Who is it that sees all things? We'll look at four particular verses. First one, it says, he cuts out channels in the rocks and his eye sees every precious thing. From Job 28 and verse 10. The next one. For he looks to the ends of the earth, and he sees under the whole heavens. Job 28, 24. The next. For his eyes are on the ways of man, and he sees all his steps. There is an individual who sees all that takes place and all that goes on. One more. The Lord looks from heaven. He sees all of the sons of men. And yet, when we look at the history of Santa Claus or Sinterklaas or St. Nicholas, and we see the roots of it and where it comes from, it is a counterfeit. It is putting somebody else who sees all things, somebody else who judges whether you've been good or bad. And again, it's in a simple character, in something, in a pagan festival, that most people say, well, this is innocent, and this is how I'm going to serve my God. Next slide. It says in Psalm 11, 4 through 5, the Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold, his eyelids test the sons of men. The Lord tests the righteous, but the wicked and the one who loves violence, his soul hates. It is God who judges. It's God who looks at these things. The next slide. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10 says, For we must all appear before the Lord, the judgment seat of Christ, and each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. It says we all stand before the judgment seat of Christ, not standing before Santa who sees everything and will judge whether you're good or bad and will reward you accordingly, but the judgment seat of Christ. And it is another counterfeit. It's just a way of pulling individuals away in their mind and in their thinking about who they are serving. And it sounds even more familiar now to what we're looking at. Revelation chapter 1 and verse 13. Revelation chapter 1 and verse 13. It says, in the midst of the seven lampstands, one is like the Son of Man, clothed in a garment down to his feet and girt about with a chest, or about his chest with a golden band. Verse 14, his head and hair were white like wool, as white as snow. His eyes were a flame of fire, his feet were like brass as refined in the furnace, and his voice was the sound of many waters. So we see who Santa Claus is counterfeiting. Next slide. Santa Claus is a counterfeit, and he is made to appear, it says here, that, as things that only Jesus Christ and God the Father do. Through Scripture, it tells us who does these things, but yet it's portrayed as Santa Claus doing these things. He is to draw the attention away and is to become the focus for mankind. A man who has white hair, who has a large garment on with a big belt. I'll show you the next slide. This is the original Santa Claus listed with Black Peter, the one who punishes. So you have one who's a rewarder and one who punishes children. But this is a photo of what they say the original Sinterklaas or Santa Claus looks like. A very interesting image when we see the pictures of this. Traditionally, the encyclopedia states that he was the Dutch Sinterklaas, a dignified religious figure riding on a white horse through the air. The next slide. So even today, in Deutschland, he rides on a horse, rides on a white horse. A religious symbol riding on a white horse and portraying somebody ancient that knows and sees all things. Revelation chapter 19. Revelation 19 and verse 11. It says, "Now I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse," just as we see here with Sinterklaas riding, "a white horse. He who sat on him was called Faithful and True, and in righteousness he judges." Now we already see who rides on a white horse and judges, and is Jesus Christ. He judges out of the books, just as portrayed by Santa Claus, judging out of a book of who's been right or wrong. It says he makes war. Verse 12, "His eyes were a flame of fire, and on his head were many crowns. And he had a name written that no one knew except for himself." Verse 13 says he was clothed in a robe dipped in blood with the name that is called the Word of God. A robe dipped in blood is what color? Big red robe. Now you can say, well, all of this is just, you know, it just happens to be like that. It's just, there's similarities, but, you know, is that really what it means? The robe that Santa Claus wears is a red robe or garment. He comes on a white horse, bringing rewards, knowing who's been good, knowing who's been bad, and brings a reward. Last slide. Santa is the aged saint who is coming and bringing his rewards with him. And people look at this today and, oh, but yeah, I know this isn't real. I know Santa Claus isn't real. But they are worshiping a religious figure. They are part of a religious system that goes back long before, because it's done on a day and it represents this Nimrod and his rebellion against God. And God says not to go after gods or to have any other part with them, yet the world has taken this in and it has become, for many, the true life, the way things really are. Revelation 22, verse 12 says, "And behold, I am coming quickly. My reward is with me to give to everyone according to his work." Which is exactly what this description of Santa Claus is. Santa Claus is coming to town. He knows who's been good or bad, and he's going to reward those who are good. He's going to give everyone according to their work. There are substitutes, and we don't see Santa Claus listed as a substitute for God or a substitute for Christ. And there are counterfeits. There are things that are portrayed that are supposed to be something real. The dictionary definition is: a counterfeit is made in the exact imitation of something valuable or important, with the intention to deceive or defraud. And as subtle as it is, and as most people think, well, Santa Claus, it's all lighthearted, it's all just tradition, it's just a story, The intention is to deceive and defraud. And Satan has latched on to that and has done a wonderful job of convincing individuals this is the proper way to serve God. The God of this world has counterfeited the entire religious system. Man was divided by languages, but Satan has deceived man into serving religious systems that are false, and it will become mystery, Babylon the Great, again. Individuals from around the world in multiple languages, and it is already becoming that way as individuals serve the same false system. He has counterfeited religious holidays in place of God's holy days. And the world around, from various countries, from various languages, they keep these religious holidays faithfully. Now many say, well, it's not a form of worship. It was. And they say it's not religious. But yet many people feel this is a religious time of year. It's the reason for the season. Get into the idea of why we're actually doing this. It's to serve God or to serve Christ. He counterfeits characters as being like or in the place of Jesus Christ himself. These are idols. They're false gods. And he's done this going all the way back to the beginning of the first kingdom, the kingdom of Babel and Nimrod, which is mystery Babylon the Great. It is the counterfeit religion.